Said, no, I think it's denarius, tomato, tomato, but I'm sure he knows more about that than I do. I like to call them both. What got my attention about this coin is that it's mentioned more than any other in the New Testament. You know, you've got the shekel, and you've got the stater, the half shekel, but this coin's mentioned more than any other. You wouldn't know that, though, just from reading the King James, because it doesn't really translate it like we would hope. It says pence, or pennyworth, or penny. That doesn't help me. I read pence and go, I have no idea. And then I read penny and think, oh, okay, it's the coins I don't even pick up. You know, quarter, yes, I will pick up a quarter. I'll tell you the truth, I'll pick up a nickel. But a penny, it just depends. Right? You will pick up a penny? All right. But when I learned from Matthew 20, verse 2, that a denarius was a day's wage, all right, that gets my attention. And what I like about this, it's interesting to me, is that 16 times this is found in the Bible, in the New Testament, 14 of the 16 are all in the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. That's interesting to me. It's found twice in Revelation 6, verse 6, but otherwise all in the Gospel accounts. What I wanted to do, do you think we should chew our cabbage twice and review this, or just go to new material? Brother Burton, you call it now. All right, go to new material. And I agree. I agree with that. I've got something for you at the end that'll summarize it. I got online this week and thought, you know what would be nice to get them all would be a replica denarius. So they all have a little something to remember this little series by. And the cheapest one I could find, they were $10 a piece. And then I did the math. I thought, you know what else is nice? A handout. Piece of paper, ink on it. So we'll do that later. Turn to Matthew 22. Okay, Brother Burton, I can't help it. I can't help it. I tried not to. Barney 5 said, can you tell a bird not to sing? Let me do this real quick. Matthew 20, verse 2, it was a day's wage. Remember, the workers go out to the vineyard at 6 in the morning, 9, then 12, then 3, then lo and behold, 5. End of the day, 6 o'clock, he pays them all what? A denarius. What was the point of that? No matter when you obey the gospel, when you come to God, right, you will be received. If you're young and you've not obeyed, he wants you to, so you can bear fruit. If you're older, right, he still wants you to come. He doesn't say, well, I'm sorry, you're, you know, not going to be able to accrue enough to retire. Whenever you know what the truth is, you obey it, God accepts us. He's a good God. Luke 7, remember Luke 7? Jesus eats with a Pharisee. A woman comes and anoints him, and Simon says, if this man were a prophet, he'd know what kind of woman that was. She's a sinner. And Jesus said, I've got something to say to you, Simon. He said, say it. He said, a man had two debtors. One owed him 500 denarii. One owed him 50. Neither could pay. He forgave them both. Which one will love him more? He said, well, he, I suppose, that he forgave the most. Jesus said, right. You see this woman? What's the point there? Appreciation for our forgiveness. Simon didn't appreciate. Simon was a Pharisee, thought he was right with God based on his pedigree. The woman knew she was a sinner. To whom is forgiven little, the same loveth little. None of us is forgiven little, right? But he didn't appreciate it. Matthew 18 is the one we talk the most about. The man, the king makes a reckoning. One servant owes him $10 million, right? Owed him 10,000 talents. The ESV footnote there says a talent's 20 years' wages. He owes him 200,000 years' wages. I don't understand how he could have accrued that much, but I get the point of the parable. That's us. He couldn't have paid that off. Have patience with me and I'll pay you all. No, you wouldn't. 200,000 years. Well, he forgives him. Then he goes out and finds a fellow servant that owes him 100 denarii. There's the word, and he won't forgive him. The king hears, he says, you wicked servant. I forgave you all that debt, and you wouldn't forgive him. Well, what do we learn from that? We said our sins against each other pale in comparison, 100 denarii versus $10 million to our sins against God. if God's forgiven us, can we withhold forgiveness from others? No. All right, last week, the Good Samaritan, a man comes to Jesus, what do I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus said, what's written in the law? How do you read it? Love the Lord your God, all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, your neighbor as yourself. Jesus said, that's right, this do and you'll live. He said, who's my neighbor? So we have the parable, and you know it. Priest passes by, Levite passes by, Samaritan binds his wounds, takes him to an inn. How much does he leave the innkeeper? 2 denarii, 2 days' wages. According to scholars, a day's stay at an inn costs 1/12 of a denarius. I don't say denarius, Luke. Denarius. That's almost a month he left. Right? 2 denarii would be 24 days' stay. 3.5 weeks for a stranger, a Samaritan at that. So we talked about going the extra mile. And then last thing we talked about was the feeding of the 5,000. Remember Jesus said to Philip, we're going to get bread for them. And Philip said, 200 denarii wouldn't be enough. NIV says over half a year's wages. Jesus multiplied it, fed 5,000 men besides women, children, had enough for 12 baskets of leftovers. Right. Then Jesus says later in that chapter, I am the bread of life. He that cometh to me shall never hunger, never thirst. That was pretty quick, Brother Burton. All right. And do you ever wonder if you could do it that quick? Well, I could just do it the way that first time. I'll be done. All right. Turn to Matthew 22. And let's just set the stage real quick. We're to Jesus' last week on earth now. As a matter of fact, by the time you get to Matthew 21, you're to Jesus' last week. It's called the Passion Week. We hear the word passion. We don't think of what this connotes. It means suffering, from a Latin root, to suffer. Remember Acts 1, verse 3? Luke says, Jesus showed himself alive after his passion by many infallible proofs. That's the King James, the ASV. Most others say after his suffering. So Jesus' last week is usually called Passion Week. Look at Matthew 21. 1 through 11 that Sunday of the Passion Week, triumphal entry, Palm Sunday, usually called. If you pick up in verse 12 and go through verse 19 of Matthew 21, that's Monday. This is on your handout, so we won't stay too long here. But beginning in you might draw a line between verses 19 and 20. You can't really tell there's a day between there and in Matthew's account, but in Mark 11:20, you can tell there's actually a day that passes between verses 19 and 20. But draw a line between verses 19 and 20, and now watch this. From Matthew 21, verse 20, all the way through 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, verse 16, that's all one day, Tuesday. And then read that sometime. With the exception of 26, verses 6 through 13, which is a flashback, so to speak. I don't want to bog down, but I will tell you this, there's more space in the Gospels devoted to this one day than any other day, and that includes Good Friday, when he was crucified. In Matthew's account, it takes up 1/5 of his Gospel, 217 out of 1,071 verses. That's 20%, that's 1/5. It's a lot for a day. You read this and you go, I have no idea what day that happened on. That's a lot for one day. Go through and read about, this was the tumultuous Tuesday. This was Jesus' last day in the temple. All right? And that's where we are. The first one we'll look at is probably the most famous of all the references to the denarius. It's when it's called the tribute penny. All right. Beginning in verse 15, we're told, and remember what's happened here. Jesus has been interrupted. Who told you could teach in here? And then he gives 3 parables, and then they're going to ask him 3 questions. The Pharisees, verse 15, went to him, plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. You know, you read the Old Testament, and you don't read a thing about a Pharisee. And then you come to the New, and it's like they're on every page. They arose in the intertestamental period. Right? Pharisees means the separated ones. They had separated themselves from the others that they looked down upon to follow not just the law of Moses, but specifically the traditions of the fathers. There were about 6,000 of them at the time of Jesus Christ. According to Paul, who would know because he was one, Acts 26:5, they were the strictest sect, S-E-C-T, of the Jews. There were several different kinds of Pharisees. A.T. Robertson has a lot about that in one of his books. But there was a group of Pharisees called the bleeding and bruised Pharisees. They would not look at a woman, even in public. And so when they saw a woman approaching, they'd cover their eyes. And they were constantly bumping into things. And so they were called the bleeding and bruised Pharisees, if you can believe that. And it's true. It's true. Now, of the various groups, by the way, sects of Judaism, only the Pharisees survived the fall of Jerusalem. But they go to trap him. They go to entangle him. It's actually a hunting word. It's the only time it's used in the whole New Testament. They're trying to trap him, to ensnare him. I just picture setting a trap for an animal, as it were, except they're trying to trap the Savior. Notice verse 16, they sent to him their disciples. We'll stop there. Why, you reckon? Why do you suppose they didn't go themselves? Maybe. Maybe so. I don't doubt they were had some arrogance. Why do you think their leaders didn't go to Jesus? That's good, Brother Butler. What else? Yeah. Jesus is too... And it's funny, they think, well, Jesus is too smart if we go ourselves, so we'll send our disciples like he won't know. They sent their students, they sent the younger Pharisees, if you will, to flatter him. Because notice what they said, we know that you are true and you teach the way of God in truth and you care for no man. They're flattering him. This is not a lesson on flattery, but ever notice flattery can be a pretty powerful weapon. It's not wrong to compliment someone. That's not what I'm talking about. Flattery's disingenuous. A compliment's nothing wrong with that. I feel bad. I feel like Opie Taylor when he had to, remember when Andy asked him if his little buddy deserved a whipping, and Opie said, I'd rather not say pa. After all, he is one of my own kind. But sometimes you'll see younger preachers. I'm 34, 5, 5, born in 78, 35. And I'll see younger preachers sometimes, and they'll find some big name preacher, and they'll try to ingratiate themselves, and they'll just flatter them. It's embarrassing, hoping to somehow maybe, they're very ambitious, want to climb some ladder. I want to get in good with you, and it's just embarrassing when you see it. They went to flatter him. But notice who they went with. The who? Herodians? What root word do you see there, right? This was the party of Herod. They were not a religious party. They were allies of Herod. They were pro-Roman. Do you see anything strange here about this grouping? Pharisees. How did the Pharisees feel about the Roman government, the Roman occupation, right? Yeah. Hated it. Well, the Herodians were pro-Roman. You've heard that politics makes strange what? Right? A.T. Robertson said they have no love for each other. They only hate Jesus more. And I think that's exactly right. So notice what they ask in verse 17. Tell us what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? I like how they thought they had asked him a yes or no question. If this was a multiple choice test, it would have been choice A, yes, choice B, no, and there is no choice C. Or not. There were three taxes that the Roman government enacted on the Jews. They had the ground tax. You had to pay to the government a tenth of all your grain, a fifth of all your oil and wine. Part of that was paid with a crop. Part of it was paid in cash, a cash equivalent. There was the income tax, 1% of a man's income. And then there was the poll tax, and that's the one that we're looking at here. If you were a male from 14 to 65 or a female from 12 to 65, you had to pay a day's wage, a denarius. That was the poll tax, and that was the tax in question. Here, they said, is it lawful? What did they mean by lawful? Did they mean according to the law of the land? No. I mean, there was no question about that, right? Is it lawful? Yeah, we're enacting the... Yeah, pay it. It's Caesar's tax, right? What do they mean by lawful? Whose law? God's law. Is it according to God's law that we pay this tax? This tax was resented by the Jews. Every time they looked at that denarius, Who did it remind them of? What did it remind them of, right? We're an occupied people. This is our land. The Romans are here. I can't look at the corner without being reminded of that. And how do you think the Jews felt, these monotheists with these pictures of emperors on these coins? They resented it. They resented it. And so they ask him, is it lawful to pay them or not? To Caesar. Caesar is just a common title. Right, like Pharaoh in the Old Testament. Well, what Pharaoh are you talking about? What Caesar are we talking about? This one was Tiberius, most likely. Well, it was Tiberius, no question. 14 to 37, he ruled. That's right in the time that we're looking at. Look him up sometime. You can just Google him, Wikipedia him, but be prepared. He was, there's some good things about him, but a lot of bad. In some senses, he was a very, I'll just say perverted individual. But paying this poll tax was the most obvious sign of submission to Rome. Turn to Acts 5, verse 37. Alan, well, Brother White, would you read it? Acts 5, 37. You'll see how they felt about this poll tax. Acts 5, 37. All right, so about 25 years before where we are now, and this was Gamaliel talking in Acts 5. He said, remember what happened with Judas of Galilee? He led a revolt, right, because one of the emperors, the procurator, took a census for tax purposes. He led a revolt. So we see how the Jews feel about this tax. It's a touchy issue, very emotional. So they're trying to put Jesus between a rock and a hard place, aren't they? Do we pay this tax or not? You've heard of the horns of a dilemma. If Jesus says yes, yes, pay your tax, who does he upset? Yeah, and the people, remember where he is right now? He's in the temple. These people are listening to him. If he says, yes, pay it. This throng that's listening to him, They're not going to like that, are they? And who wanted him to say yes? Right? Who wanted to turn the people, right? The Pharisees. Go ahead and say pay the tax. All right. But on the other hand, if he says no, that coin has this image of this pagan, we're not going to bow down to that. Right? We're the people of God. Do not pay this tax. Who's going to turn him over to Pilate so fast? Right. The Herodians. The Herodians. You see how you've got these unlikely allies here. Right. And so I wish I could take credit for this quote, but I can't. McGarvey, in one of his commentaries, said, what but divine wisdom could escape from so cunningly devised a dilemma? Picture yourself in that case. What would you have said? Can you give me a second? Did Jesus ever do that? No. Was he ever at a loss for words? No. Always knew what to say. The right thing to say. He never had to apologize. Oh, I misspoke. Oh, I should have said that. Notice verse 18. Someone read verse 18, please. All right. Listen to this. Listen to this. I love this. This is again from McGarvey. Remember what they've done. The Pharisees said, now look, we can't go ourselves because he'll know something's up. So we'll send our disciples. Those people that are kindly disposed towards the younger. We'll send our young Pharisees out and we're going to flatter him. We know that you are true and you do not care for any person. You teach the way of God in truth. So what do you think? Should we pay this tax or not? And listen to McGarvey. Deeply as they had laid their plot and cunningly as they had approached him, they knew from the first word of his answer that he saw through it. that he detected their design and their hypocrisy. Isn't that good? We've got him. And the first thing Jesus said is, hypocrites, why do you test me? I know what you're doing. You know, if that had been me, how do you react when someone flatters you? Well, that's very kind of you. What, you know, oh, you shouldn't have said that. Remember when Nicodemus went to him? Remember when he complimented him? Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher come from God because no one can do the signs that you do unless God is with him. He's a Pharisee. You know, I would have thought Jesus, it wouldn't, so, you know, if I'm reading this knowing the Pharisees, some Pharisees said Jesus had a demon and was insane. They said he was born out of wedlock. We be not born of fornication, they said. In other words, you were. I would have thought Jesus said, well, thank you, Nicodemus. Coming from a Pharisee, that's very refreshing. But Jesus said, verily, verily, I say unto you, unless you're born again, you'll not see the kingdom of heaven. What? Jesus could answer what was in someone's heart. He could answer what they thought rather than what they said. You couldn't flatter him. He was on to that, so to speak. Same here. Same here. He said, show me the money. And they brought him a denarius. This again is called the tribute penny, I think, in the King James. Now, the tax for the temple service was paid in the Jewish shekel. But this was a foreign, the tax for the Roman government, and it was paid in foreign coin, silver coin here. Ever thought about this? Jesus had to say, now what was, again was a denarius? Was it a year's wage? It was a day's wage. And Jesus didn't say, well, hold on a second. I've got one here. He said what? Can I see one? Jesus did not have a denarius of his own. That's something to think about sometime maybe. Jesus said the foxes have their holes, the birds of the air have their nests, and I don't have anywhere to lay my head. Jesus did not have a pocket full of denarii. He said, can I see one? Show me one. Whose image and inscription is this? Now, remember what they had said to him. Is it lawful to pay this tax or not? A yes, B no. When I was here back in June for the VBS, we talked about Jesus and questions. I don't know how many questions people asked Jesus during his ministry. Probably thousands. But in the Gospels, we have, depending on what version, you use about 100. I counted 103 in the English Standard Version. If you had a question for Jesus, I wouldn't ask him a yes or no question. I went through, I think maybe once, three times technically, out of 103, he answered yes, no questions with yes, no answers. Only one directly. Tell us plain, are you the Messiah? I am. Mark 14, around verse 61, 62. And that's about it. That's about it. So if you had a yes, no question, I don't know that he would answer that the way you wanted him to. More often, Jesus would take a question and do what with it? Yeah, he'd ask a question back to you. He did that a fourth of the time. I don't know how often he did it. But as far as what we have recorded, 26 times out of 103, I counted, that's about a fifth. So he's much more likely to ask you a question in response than to tell you what you want to hear. So they come to him with, do we pay or not? And he says, show me the coin. Whose image is on it? Whose image was on that coin? Here's what's interesting. He says, whose image and inscription? Let's go back. I've got the picture of it. Look at me, Grat. I still point at the screen, and I don't know why. All right, there it is. On the front is Tiberius, and on the back, Luke, correct me if I'm wrong, that's supposed to be his mother. Is that Livia? Is that right? Now, I don't read Latin, but I know the inscription, and I was going to, Luke, is it on the front or the back? But the inscription is supposed to say Tiberius Caesar, the son of the divine Augustus. Luke, is that on the front or the back? Because I can't read it. It's on the front? Okay, what is that on the back as well? It looks to be writing on the back as well. Can you? Okay. Thought this said made in China, but I just wanted to double check. No. So Luke, tell me again, on the front is the inscription. On the front is the inscription. I knew that Luke would know. It's good to have Luke in here this morning. Luke came to Asheville and did a series on this that people are probably still talking about there. They loved it. Loved it. And Luke has taught me some about these coins as well. But at any rate, on the inscription it says, here's Tiberius, he's the son of the divine Augustus. Well, Augustus was far from divine, as you know. But here's something interesting. The fact that they had the coin. Jesus says, you know, that's why I said, think about why Jesus, you know, had to ask them for the coin. One reason, he didn't have one. But here's something interesting. He said, could you show me one? Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the fact that Jesus' questioners could provide him one kind of cut the ground out from under their feet. They were using Caesar's money. He didn't have a denarius. They were using Caesar's money, so let them pay Caesar's taxes. Ever thought about that? Could you show me one? Could you show me one? Yes. Oh, so you have some. You have Caesar's money, do you? You see that? Do you see that? All right. Notice verse 21. Jesus says, render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. All right, so this coin has Caesar's image. It has his inscription. It was proper, therefore, to give it back to him when he called for it. Whose image do we bear? Right. Genesis 1, 26 and 27, in the image of God, let us make man in our image after our own likeness. So this coin has Caesar's image. Render it to him. But we bear God's image, so we must give to him what he claims. What does he claim? Right, our hearts, our lives. Who will read Romans 12:1, please? We'll talk about Jesus' answer. It was the perfect answer. It said just what needed to be said, but not too much either. What does Romans 12:1 say? All right, so what is our reasonable service? Presenting our bodies to God, a living sacrifice, our bodies. So you render, this coin has Caesar's image, render it to him. Your body's in God's image. Render it to him. So, the first part of this answer that Jesus gives, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Who did that satisfy? Right, the Herodians. And then the last part of the answer, satisfy the people. Render to God the things that are God's. So Jesus avoids this dilemma that they sought to entrap him with. He did not define, did he? Jesus did not define all the duties owed to Caesar or to God, but he gave a reminder that we owe to each his due. Right? But if you want to see something, turn to Luke 23, verse 2. We're told in verse 22, they marveled and left him and went away. I would like to have seen that. They went there to trap him. But rather than losing his popular support, Jesus ends up embarrassing his challengers. And Jesus said, did you think it was too strong of a term at the beginning? He said, why test you me, you hypocrites? Jesus sometimes used strong language, didn't he, depending on the situation. Someone struggling with sin, Jesus was so tender. Woman, where are your accusers? As no man condemned you, neither do I. Go your way, sin no more. On the other occasions, Matthew 23, John 8, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, you travel sea and land to make one convert, and when you make him, you've made him twofold more a child of hell than you. So Jesus could use strong language when it was warranted. Jesus could do something, though, that we cannot. He could see into people's hearts. And I can't do that. You can see fruits, you can see people's actions, I know that. But I can't see someone's heart. Sometimes brethren will say, well, look at what Jesus said, and I can say that too. You be very careful, you're not Jesus. He rarely did that, and he did that to people who, these were the religious professionals who were hypocrites, and they warranted it. You read who Jesus used his strong language for. It was not people struggling in sin, trying to do better, trying to do right. He did not have harsh words for them. Right? Jesus, meek and gentle. But for people who were hypocrites, watch out. Watch out. Now, read, please, Luke 23, verse 2. Now, where are we? What, Matthew 22 is what day? Tuesday. Now, fast forward 3 days to Friday. Who has Luke 23, 2? Lamar, do you have it? What's your complaint against him? We found this fellow forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar. What had Jesus said 3 days before? What had he said 3 days earlier? Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. And now 3 days later, he's on trial before Pilate. We found this fellow forbidding to pay taxes. Liars. Right? That's a lie. And that's why Jesus said, why test you me, you hypocrites? Hypocrite. Did you know the word for hypocrite? We got to move on. You know this already. An actor. That's the original word for an actor. Someone who plays a part. Someone who plays a role. The old actors back in the Greek drama. Hippocrates. They were hypocrite. And then the word kind of evolved in meaning. So now someone who plays a part for real. You pretend to be one way, but you're really another. Two-faced. Hypocrite. That's where it comes from. Well, let's look at our last one. And this one may be my favorite. I have seven favorites. This is one of the seven. Turn to John 12 now. I teach six classes at school, and the kids will say, are we your favorite class? And I'll say, you are in my top six. And they don't get that. They're like, oh, right. I only have six. But anyway. Look at the first handout that I gave you at the bottom. It's got some things you might like to know. John's gospel is the easiest gospel to, I say, tell time in. It helps me to know, you know, hey, where am I right now? What period in Jesus' ministry am I in? If I'm reading John 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know Jesus' ministry, you can break it down into three periods. First period's a year, second period's 2 years, third period's 6 months. Well, that first period that's a year, you won't read about that in Matthew, Mark, or Luke. They don't cover it at all. We would not know about the wedding in Cana. We wouldn't know about Nicodemus, the Samaritan woman, were it not for John. John 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And in case you're interested, in your Bibles between Matthew 11 and Matthew 4, 11 and Matthew 4, 12, you can tuck that material. About 15% of John's gospel passes between Matthew 4:11 and Matthew 4:12. 136 verses, if I'm not mistaken. So, early Judean ministry, if you're in John 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What do Matthew, Mark, and Luke focus on? They don't focus on the Judean ministry. They focus on what ministry? Right? Galilean. You pick up Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and Jesus starts in Galilee, it seems. That's where Matthew 4:12 begins. That was 2 years. But you get to John, and John doesn't even talk about it except for one chapter, John 6. And that's the feeding of the 5,000. That's the only miracle in all four Gospels. So John, it's almost as though John says, I know what Matthew, Mark, and Luke have written. They focused on the Galilean ministry. Why devote my book to that? Chapter 6. One chapter he devotes to that two-year period. Now, look at this. From John 7 to John the end, which is 21. By the time you get to John 7, you're to the last 6 months of Jesus' life on earth, his ministry. 6 months, 15 chapters. In fact, by the time you get to John 12:12, you're to his last week. That's why one scholar said that the Gospels are really just accounts of the Passion with introductions. If every week in Jesus' life was given as much attention as the Passion Week, the Gospels would be 50 times their current size, to give you an idea. All right, John 12:12, we are to his last week. Chapters 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 are Thursday. 18 and 19 are Friday. 13 through 17, Thursday. 18, 19, Friday. That means that a third of his book, seven chapters out of 21. That's 48 hours. Jesus' ministry lasted about 1,300 days. 1,300 days. John selects only about 30 different days to talk about. Can you imagine trying to edit that down? You've got 13. What are you going to talk about? What are you going to write about? Obviously under the direction of the Spirit. Only 30 separate days he talks about. And he spends a third of his book, chapters 13 through 19, on 48 hours, Thursday and Friday. He doesn't talk much about Tuesday, though. Doesn't say anything about Tuesday. I wonder why. Well, Matthew, I want to say Matthew did that to death, but that wouldn't be appropriate, right? Matthew covered a lot of it already. Okay, John 12, begins with, we're at the beginning of the chapter, begins with an incident that occurred just 6 days before the Lord's final Passover. So this is just before the Passion Week starts. This is maybe Friday or Saturday of the week before. So Jesus comes to Bethany, which is where Mary, Martha, and Lazarus lived. Lazarus, what about him, right? Jesus did what for Lazarus? Raised him from the dead. I don't have time to talk about this. You think when Lazarus came the second time that he died that he said, look, let me go this time. You know, Mary, when they bring him back, he's like, look, I appreciate that, but leave me alone. I'm going to be with the Lord. But at any rate, they give a dinner for him. They give a dinner for him, Mary and Martha do. And Lazarus is there. In chapter 11 is when Lazarus was raised, so now we're in chapter 12. You can imagine people want to see Lazarus. They're giving a dinner in honor of Jesus, though. Knowing what you know about Mary and Martha, which one do you think is busy being the hostess? Right? Martha, Martha. Again, Martha's is planning this out. Mary is the contemplative one. She's always seated at the Master's feet. Lazarus is at the table. Well, she, and by the way, this is not that same woman that we read about on number two. This is very, it sounds, when you read it, it sounds, hey, there's a woman. She breaks the box. She anoints Jesus, wipes his feet. Not the same. Not the same. The woman in chapter Luke 7 is an unnamed woman, and that was from the Galilean period, which was, remember, that middle period, and now we're to the end. We're to the last week. So these are two separate instances. The only reason I say that is today, if you look up about Mary, a lot of people believe she was a Reformed prostitute. No, 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 no. They're confusing her with a woman in Luke 7 who is unnamed. But at any rate, she anoints Jesus, and the room is filled with the smell of that fragrance, the perfume. Who did not like that? Read John 12, verse 5. And Judas says, why was this ointment not sold for how much? 300 pence, King James. The New King James has it. Denarii. Why was this not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? Look at him. He's just always... You know, there's a lesson here, I think, too. No matter what good you do, somebody will complain about it. Try to do something good. Why didn't they do this instead? And Jesus has to say, leave her alone. Or if Jesus would tell me sometime, Brandon, leave them alone. You know, they're doing good. They may not be doing what you want them to do, or you may have a different idea, but leave them alone. Why did she do this? I think, are we ever guilty of that? At any rate. Did he say that because he just had a good, he's a good person, right? John says, he said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And he would pilfer through the bag. He was the one that kept the bag. And so, yeah, boy, he wished that was sold. Why wasn't this sold? And then I'd have access to it. I'm going to pilfer through that. I'd love to get my hands on, you know, that much. Now, in Mark's account, Mark says, Mark has Judas saying more than 300 denarii. Does anyone have the NIV here this morning? What does it say, Karen? It was worth how much in verse 5, John 14, or John 12, 5? It was worth a year's wage. You know, some people, what was it? They know the cost of everything and the value of nothing. Ever heard that? And you're out of the gate. That's worth, it's a year's wages. He's always, you see how his mind works. Right? We'll talk about that in a minute. Jesus rebuked Judas and said, leave her alone. She's doing this. It's as though she's preparing my body for burial. Remember, within a week, he's going to be on the cross. And he said, the poor you have with you always, and whensoever you will, you can do them good, but me, you don't. And Mark has this in his account. Wherever the gospel is preached in the whole world, there will also this, which she has done, be told in memory of her. It gives me chills to think every time I hear this text read, or every time I hear somebody mention it, I think about this prophecy Jesus made. Right? Jesus says, everywhere the gospel goes, you're going to hear about what she's done. We're talking about it today. We're talking about it today. All right. The gift Mary gave to Jesus was very expensive. It was worth a year's wages. It reminds me in some ways of Stephen in the book of Acts who had a piece of land and he sold it, right, and brought the money to the apostles. I said, Stephen, Barnabas, brings the money, lays it at their feet, and they called him the son of consolation. But now let's compare, because this is just 6 days before the Passover. Now let's fast forward, right? Compare what Mary thought about Jesus. I'm going to give you this gift that cost me, that is worth a year's salary. And let's look at old Judas. Remember, why wasn't this sold and given to the poor? He didn't care about the poor. Matthew 26, just right, not long after this happens, this anointing of Jesus, Judas goes out to see how much they will give him if he betrays the Lord. And according to Matthew 26:15, how much did they say they would give him? You remember? 30 pieces of silver. I always get that confused. I always want to say 20 for some reason, but you're right. It's 30 pieces, 30 shekels. Somebody says, "Well, I don't. That's a lot. Is that a lot?" Turn. Make a note if you beside Matthew 26:15. Matthew 26:15, where it says he went out and wanted to find out how much he could get, and they agreed for 30 pieces of silver. If you don't have this margin, you may have a margin note in your Bible, center column reference. But if you don't, you might consider writing, see Exodus 21:32. And then someone please turn, if you don't mind, and read to us Exodus 21:32. Who has Exodus 21:32? Brother Isabel. All right, that's it. If an ox gores a slave, male or female, the owner will give to their master 30 shekels of silver. So, Judas valued Jesus at the price of a wounded slave. Now you compare Mary's estimation of Jesus with that of Judas's. I'm going to give this gift that's worth a year of my salary. And Judas says, I value at the price of a wounded slave. Compare their estimations of Jesus and then ask yourself this question. What is He worth to my soul? Do y'all sing that song here? We had a song at Pima. What is He worth to your soul? There's Mary's estimate. Have you ever given to the Lord a gift? Have you ever given to the Lord out of devotion, out of love in your heart, something worth the years of your salary? Who among us has, right? And no one would say they did if they had, I know. But just ask yourself the question, have you ever given to the Lord that kind of a gift that Mary did? What is He worth to you? Right? When we're giving on Sunday morning, you're not giving to Alan or myself or Jim. That's giving to the preacher, not giving to the preacher. We're giving to the Lord, aren't we? To further His work, to further His cause. You ever ask yourself this? What's He worth to me? It puts me to shame to think about that. Right? What's He worth to my soul? Well, you see a big difference with Mary's estimate and Judas, don't we? Well, that, friends, concludes the series. We didn't cover all of the instances. We covered 7. There are others. You might do a little search if you're interested. I have this in lieu of your coin, and this just summarizes our study. I'll probably put this outside where the CDs are instead of passing it out now. And if you want one, you may take one. Just summarizes our study. I appreciate Alan letting me fill in for him and his class very much, and I've enjoyed being with you these last 3 weeks. I thank you so very much. I really do.